This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to focus on the benefits of something that you hear about all the time, the Mediterranean diet. They say eat a Mediterranean diet. It's the ultimate diet. And I have to confess that back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I formulated my salad and salmon diet, it was based on the Mediterranean diet. And so many papers have come out subsequently suggesting that the Mediterranean diet has numerous health benefits. Today, we're going to talk to an expert. She is also a co-broadcaster, so it's fun to interview someone who is on the radio. She hosts a radio program on WVNJ in New York. That's the same station that carries my program on Saturdays. Her program is on Friday mornings. There's a lot of health content on WVNJ. She is Jolie Root, who is senior nutritionist and educator for Carlson, which is a wonderful manufacturer of a wide variety of high-quality nutritional supplements, and has been in the marketplace for, well, as long as I've been in practice, and I've always relied on them for really high-quality fish oil and vitamin E and many other products. Jolie, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
It's always a pleasure to converse with you, Dr. Hoffman. My gosh, we've been going. I was thinking, how long have I known Dr. Hoffman? It's somewhere between 20 and 30 years, I think, which is just, that blows my mind, really, because I, you know, I forget how quickly the decades go by, but we have been having conversations about health for a long time, you and
indeed.
I.
Indeed. And we're a mutual admiration society. We always engage in lively discussions when you run into each other at nutritional conferences and so on. So you're eminently qualified to tackle today's subject, which is the Mediterranean diet. So I think there's some confusion about the Mediterranean diet, because a lot of people think that, I don't know, Mediterranean diet is eating lots of pasta, you know, lots of, you know, whole grain bread. But it kind of, the Mediterranean diet seems to be in the eye of the beholder, right? You know, it's a lot of different interpretations of what is a traditional diet.
I suppose if you line six or seven or eight nutritionists up and ask them that question, you probably would get as many different answers as there were people. So you're right about that. But it's not a lot of bread and pasta. What I think about when I think about the Mediterranean diet is fresh food, and with the emphasis on vegetables and fruits, nuts, legumes play a part there. Fish more often than red meat, poultry and fish certainly more often than red meat, and emphasis on olive oil as the dominant cooking fat and dominant fat in general in the diet, whether it's cooked with or added to foods. So less red meat, less processed meat, more seafood and poultry, and a great deal more vegetable and fruit consumption than what we see in the Western diet.
Well, it appears that the Mediterranean diet may be sort of an endangered species, because I think the World Heritage Organization has designated the Mediterranean diet as possibly an endangered species. I don't think they had that necessarily in mind, but you know, they say that it has made the UNESCO's heritage list because I guess in many parts of the Mediterranean, the Mediterranean diet is becoming, as traditionally interpreted, has become a thing of the past, you know, with the advent of processed foods and convenience foods and westernized foods. So this may be a vanishing phenomenon.
Well, that's going to be unfortunate if that turns out to be the case, because there's nothing nicer. I don't know how much you've traveled, but to be in Europe, be in Italy or Spain or France, Greece, and the traditional approach of going to the market and buying some fresh things and having them that day, and a glass of wine while you prepare the meal, and just a lot of camaraderie and a very relaxed approach toward everything. If that goes by the wayside in, you know, making room for the Western approach to food, it's going to be a treasure that's lost in that, if that ends up being the case. So I hope they're wrong about that, UNESCO.
Indeed. And I think that actually moderate amounts of alcohol consumption play a role in the traditional Mediterranean diet, particularly red wine. So that may be part of the health equation, although, you know, that's controversial because, some studies show that alcohol, especially in the context of a poor diet, may have adverse effects on health.
But there was a study I just talked about this week. There was a study, I'm sorry, I burst in on you, but I agree. Alcohol is this double-edged sword. There seems to be benefit, but there certainly is indication of harm as well. There was a study that I talked about on air this week that any amount of alcohol is associated with hippocampal brain volume loss. And that's a concern. We want to hold on to our brain volume as we age. And it was saying that even by the definition of moderate, which is one drink for women or two drinks for men daily, even that amount of consumption was associated with some brain volume, brain mass loss. Mm-hmm. So the intake of resveratrol, which is what's in the red wine, one of the compounds in the red wine, and certainly the mood elevating benefit of a small amount of alcohol, it's arguably beneficial, but and on another topic, if you talk to Charles Simone and talk about breast health for women, anything
kind of
more than three or four three or four a week glasses of something is, I think, associated with something like quadruple the risk of hormonally linked breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So alcohol, is it good? Is it bad? We're going to be talking and debating about this for probably many years to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends on which doctor you're talking to, whether it's the cardiologist or the oncologist. I guess the cardiologist would have a glass of red wine, and the oncologist would say, no, stay away. So, coming back to our topic of the Mediterranean diet, you sent me a wonderful compendium in preparation for this interview of very, very sophisticated scientific articles analyzing components of the Mediterranean diet, trying to establish, what is it about the Mediterranean diet that makes it so healthy, and what's the take-home lesson for Americans who want to incorporate the health benefits of Mediterranean diet?
There have been numerous articles over the last several years talking about the Mediterranean diet and trying to tease out what is it. And we can discuss them. I sent you quite a number of them, but starting with the effect of olive oil on glucose response after a high glycemic index meal. I found that interesting. It was published in Diabetes Care in 2016. And it was patients that were type 1 diabetics. And it actually found they were able to make a distinction between the quality of fat in the diet, which is something we talk about with Mediterranean diet, that we're swapping out these omega-6 seed oils, canola and others that are typically used in the West for olive oil, which is more of a monounsaturated with a certain amount of saturated fat. Well, they compared that to either butter or a low-fat diet in diabetics, and they measured their after-meal blood sugar levels, the postprandial glucose response. And even with a high glycemic index, so probably a fairly high amount of carbohydrate intake in the meal, the olive oil group had much less of a spike of glucose level after the meal, which would mean less need or even lower dosing of insulin. These were type 1s, so they're going to be insulin dependent. And this is a good thing, because stopping that roller coaster of spike of blood sugar and then use of insulin and then drop of blood sugar in people that are diabetic is a target for treatment. And the conclusion was that extra virgin olive oil attenuated the early blood sugar spike after a high glycemic index meal. And so there's just one benefit, but the stabilizing of blood sugar levels is something that is really important for everyone now, because so many people are either pre-diabetic or have developed diabetes as a type 2, later onset diabetes, or even unfortunately in children type 2 diabetes, or so many of these insulin-dependent individuals. Everyone needs all the tools that they can get to stabilize blood sugar levels, and it looks like olive oil is one of those.
Indeed. And so the question is, what is it about olive oil that confers these benefits? Now, there has been an effort to refine the olive oil into its components, such that we have canola oil, which is also high in monounsaturated fats, and that's thought to provide the benefits of oleic acid, which is in the olive oil. It's cheaper, it's processed, it's got, you know, doesn't go stale because it's highly refined. Does that actually meet the requirements of extra virgin olive oil, or is there something, some other component of extra virgin olive oil that may deliver the benefits?
Well, we like to look at the phenolic compounds in extra virgin olive oil, the antioxidant polyphenols, and I think that's going to be one of the things that says or determines that olive oil is different than canola oil. The structure of the fat is one thing, but are there other compounds that can explain the benefit of olive oil? And I think the polyphenol content and the, you know, oleuropeins and the phenolic compounds, the oleocanthal, and other things like that that are in the olive oil will make it distinct from just another monounsaturated oil like canola.
Indeed.
And there will be more science done. That's the fascinating thing about, for me, nutrition, is that it's an ongoing story that evolves with more and more work.
Well, that would actually highlight the benefit of, unrefined extra virgin olive oil that is full of these additional ingredients, that is highly aromatic, because the aroma is associated with the presence of the polyphenols. You know, Americans don't like strong tasting olive oils. They're used to refined oils, and sometimes they turn up their nose because the olive oil has a flavor, or it's bitter. They don't want strong flavors, and maybe then they're missing out on some of these beneficial compounds.
There was some early work that was done that looked at the stinging, and stinging sounds like a negative thing, but it's a sensation. I don't mean to make it sound like it's painful like a bee sting necessarily, but there is a sensation.
It's like a spicy sensation.
Buds.
Yeah, it's spicy.
Yeah, and exactly. And it mimics the same kind of sensation that one would get if one held an ibuprofen in the mouth for some time. And turns out that this sensation is associated with the higher quality, the highest quality olive oils. When you get that tickle, or stinging sensation with the oil, you know that it's a high polyphenol content oil, and a benefit of that is similar to ibuprofen in that it has a stronger anti-inflammatory impact, blunting inflammation in the body. And so they said, you know, it's not comparable to a therapeutic dose of ibuprofen, but it might be comparable to about 10% of a therapeutic dose of ibuprofen. So for people that might be suffering from a kind of a low-grade systemic chronic inflammatory response in the body, olive oil as a dietary fat can be a constant exposure to the same chemistry of blocking inflammation that a dose of ibuprofen might give.
I was fascinated too by a study that you sent me, Archives of Internal Medicine 2000, olive oil and reduced need for antihypertensive medications. That's pretty amazing.
Yes, it really is. And that was reaching back a little way, but I saved so many things. It's funny. My files are really fascinating, but it's amazing. I find my way through them pretty well. They were able to, together with the use of olive oil and we must point out a slight reduction in saturated fat intake, they were able to lower the need, the dose, the requirement for antihypertensive medications, and they felt like it was through enhanced function of nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator. And so they were assigned, there were hypertensive patients that either were on a monounsaturated fat diet with olive oil or a polyunsaturated fat diet, and they reduced saturated fat. And they were able to lower their blood pressure medication.
By the way, the polyunsaturated fat diet allowed only sunflower oil, and I don't think it worked as well. It didn't do the trick as well. And the reason for reducing saturated fat was not per se, I think, in this study, as I see it, because saturated fat causes hypertension, but merely because they just wanted to, you know, if you had people just add a lot of olive oil to their diet that was high in saturated fat, you just increase the calories. So I think they just wanted to keep the calories even. So they said cut back on a little bit on your saturated fats while we supplement you with these, olive oil, in one case, polyunsaturated fats to keep the caloric intake even. I think that was the idea there.
Yes. And, you know, to reduce that as a confounding factor. But what was interesting was the antihypertensives were reduced by 48% during the monounsaturated or the olive oil diet, and only by 4% during the sunflower oil.
And what upsets me is that if that were a drug, that drug would be a blockbuster drug worth billions of dollars for the pharmaceutical company that invented that drug. A medication that could reduce blood pressure, you know, 48% or requirements for medication by 48%, that's a pretty robust response. And I think many drugs are approved on the basis of far less vigorous response than 48%
fractions.
Response. Yeah.
Yes, fractions of that. And you're right, it would be a blockbuster, but it would need to be a drug to ever see the light of day, because if it were something that were available over the counter easily for everyone to use at home safely with no adverse effects, no one would ever talk about it except for you and me.
Right. And by the way, you know, I hope the FDA and the FTC aren't listening, because it's illegal to make a drug claim for a natural substance. So under the terms of our current laws, we have to make statements like supports optimal blood pressure levels. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes, supports blood pressure within
the normal
level, triglyceride levels within the normal range, when what really happens is the blood pressure comes down. Yeah. And what really happens with fish oils is triglycerides come down. Mm-hmm. But the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which it makes the distinction of drug versus food, dictates us as foods as not being able to actually share the reality of what happens, which is a frustration, but I'd rather not have to do all of the drug-like studies on every natural compound. I think so we have to live with this.
That was the compromise behind Deshaies, is that they said, you know, keep your claims modest, otherwise you're going to have to, you know, go through the same rigorous approval process as drugs. And then, you know, small, nimble companies like Carlson wouldn't be able to afford the tab to get all their products individually approved. Each product would require tens of millions of dollars worth of research and approval fees to get before the FDA and get approved. So, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Yes,
so,
indeed.
I mean, ultimately, it would put this industry out of business.
Yeah.
Well, so it was for survival that this is the devil's bargain. It was for survival that we agreed to this because we needed to maintain our right to exist because there isn't the money in supplements that there is in pharmaceuticals. But that brings up the isn't that a shame conversation, because the pharmaceuticals are as expensive as they are because of all of that research, and mm-hmm. the research needs to be done on that side of things because of the adverse events that are possible, where on the natural side of things, you almost never see them unless it's an abuse of some sort, like an energy drink kind of situation.
I don't think anybody ever died of fish oil except for maybe some poor person in Portugal who fell into a vat of olive oil accidentally and drowned. Maybe.
Oh, off the boat, yeah. You know, someone that froze because the season for cod liver oil is the winter in Norway in the Arctic Circle. The sun never comes up and it's bitter cold. So that might be an adverse event. But as far as the oils themselves, no, they save lives.
Indeed. Okay. So another study that you sent me, and this is the double whammy, and I think this goes to the heart of the Mediterranean diet secret. Olive oil and fish oil enriched diets modify plasma lipids and susceptibility of LDL to oxidative modification. Gets a little complicated here. You know, let's cope with the terminology. Male patients with peripheral vascular disease. That's called the Spanish Nutrition Study. Now, a little translation here is, and you're aware of this. Let me just explain to our listeners, Jolie, when we check for cholesterol, we can always look at cholesterol, overall cholesterol, and then we break it down to LDL and HDL. But medical nutritionists like myself, we slice and dice the LDL even more. We look at particle size, but we also look at levels of oxidized LDL. And, you know, we know that LDL is not good, but what's particularly bad is when LDL becomes oxidized. So here what they're saying is they're studying the effect of these diets that are enriched in olive oil and fish oil on the tendency of LDL to become oxidized. Mm-hmm. And in a group of patients who seem to be at high risk, they already have peripheral vascular disease. In other words, they have probably claudication, they have difficulty walking, blockage in their arteries that lead to their lower extremities. So tell us about that study.
Well, what they found were that the dietary fatty acids, which are so important in governing the lipids that you mentioned, the HDL, the LDL, triglycerides, which I mentioned earlier, what they found was that these oils actually had the benefit of protecting LDL from becoming oxidized. And when medical nutritionists such as yourself look at oxidized LDL, they look there because it is oxidized LDL that is thought to accelerate the atherogenic processes, or the processes of the damage of the interior of the blood vessel and the forming of the fatty streaks and the blockages that happen with cardiovascular disease and peripheral vascular disease. So the sclerotic, the plaque formation blocking blood vessels in the legs is accelerated by oxidized LDL, and the olive oil and the fish oil protected against the oxidation, the susceptibility of LDL to be oxidized. And so these are oils that can protect us from the process of the acceleration of vascular diseases like peripheral vascular disease or cardiovascular disease.
Indeed. And what's interesting in the study is that, you know, as I read down, it didn't change the level of LDL. So there's no claim that it lowers cholesterol or lowers LDL, but the quality of the LDL was significantly improved by the addition of olive oil and fish oil, which I think is a subtle difference that might be missed in some studies that say, well, you know, fish oil doesn't lower LDL. It doesn't affect cholesterol, so, you know, no benefit there. But when you look more closely, there was a benefit that explains, you know, and the way we do science is we look at epidemiology, which is that this is a population, if they follow that diet, they're relatively free of the diseases that we experience in the industrialized West. And then we can try to explain it by looking at some of these mechanisms. So this is very interesting. Hey, Jolie, what we do is we divide these podcasts into two parts. So we're coming to a break. We got lots more to talk about the benefits of the Mediterranean diet, particularly as regards fish oil or the omega-3s, which can also come from nuts in this case, as well as olive oil and all the beneficial polyphenols present in olive oil. Those seem to be keys to the benefits of Mediterranean diet. When we return, more with Jolie Root. Jolie is senior nutritionist and educator for Carlson, which is an outstanding manufacturer of nutritional supplements with a long tradition of excellence. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.